welcome to Failing Boldly, a podcast that invites people to share stories about failure, resilience, and perseverance. I'm Christian Kuhn, author of the book Failing Boldly and pastor of Urban Village Church in Chicago. As you might guess, because of my profession, I'll be talking to folks who have religious backgrounds, but I won't be exclusively talking to people from those worlds. And that includes my guest today, Alicia Gonzalez. Alicia is the founding executive director of Chicago Run, an influential nonprofit in Chicago whose mission is to promote the health and wellness of Chicago children through innovative, engaging, and sustainable running programs. Currently, Chicago Run is in 43 schools throughout the city, and 17,500 students participate in the program. Alicia has won numerous awards for her work, including the 2016 President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition Community Leadership Award. In this podcast, Alicia shares some really interesting stories about what it takes to start a nonprofit, what her response was when Chicago Public Schools closed several of the schools that she works with, and the connection between social justice and childhood obesity. As many of you know, I'm just starting out this podcast, and so the audio isn't always what I would like it to be. And so in this conversation, Alicia and I are speaking in a public setting, but I think you can hear our conversation quite well. I hope you enjoy it. So I am here today with Alicia Gonzalez, and as part of our Failing Boldly podcast, Alicia, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Christian.
We are here on the top of the Soho House here near downtown Chicago on a lovely day. First, before we start talking a little bit about failure and how you have responded to it in your own life and career, tell us a little bit about how you got to start Chicago Run and where it is today.
Great. Well, thank you again for having me. It is a beautiful, sunny summer day. It was rather serendipitous in 2008. For the majority of my career up until that point, I had been in youth development and community organizing, and I was always a runner, and I grew up in Chicago in two different neighborhoods, so Pilsen and Little Italy. And it, you know, for me, coming back to Chicago, I really wanted to make an impact on the city and its youth. So I went back into youth development and community organizing. But in around 2006, I got asked to go into the private sector and head up Hispanic business development for a local bank. And at the time, I thought this would be a great opportunity for me because I always had this vision of starting a nonprofit for Latina girls to get them up and running. Eventually, even as a child, I actually have this, and this is my bigger dream, is to eventually open up athletic centers in some of our communities, because I was an exception in my neighborhood that my family actually was able to expose me to athletics and sports, but I was not the rule. The rule was that most kids didn't have access to any physical activity outside of the school day. Now, back in 2006 and 2007, kids didn't have access to physical education even in school. So I thought this was one of the social injustices of our day. So I kind of thought strategically I would go over to the private sector and learn about business and make some contacts in the private world to eventually have enough money to be able to start my own nonprofit. And so while I did not make that much money, I did make some contacts in the business world. But in 2008, an article had come out about me and my running, and in it, it said, "Where do you see yourself in 5 years?" And I told this journalist my dream of starting this nonprofit. And here I was in my little cushy bank job, and I thought, okay, I've got to actually do something and put pen to paper now that it's out there. I mean, I'm sure no one actually read this article. I don't even think my mother read it, but it was now out there. And so I started Googling everything I could on childhood obesity and running organizations and other sports-based youth development nonprofits in the city. And I made a phone call to an organization called CLOCK, which is the Consortium to Lower Obesity in Chicago Children. I called them and asked them for advice on how to start a running nonprofit. And they said, "Well, we don't give advice on that, but we just so happened to get a job description for a local family foundation that wanted to start a new running organization, and they were looking for an executive director." So they're really, the stars were aligned in 2008, and they were probably gonna have to get a restraining order against me because I wanted that job so badly. And And I literally thought, this is exactly, I can do this. I had never been an executive director before, but I knew I had the passion and the drive and a ton of energy. And so lo and behold, we joined forces with a local family foundation, and I was the first staff member. I had a pilot program that was a 10-week pilot program with 2,000 kids, and I was the only staff. I had to build a board. I had no office space. I was working out of Panera Bread. I had a laptop, 12 schools, 2,000 kids, and a ton of energy and a lot of sleepless nights of just making sure that this was actually going to take off. And that's how we started Chicago Run almost 10 years ago.
Wow. So in those early days, is there a story or two of moments where failure happened, whether it's something that you, a misstep that you took, or something happened to you, and if so, how did you respond to it?
Sure. I mean, I think that I personally have certainly failed quite a few times in my own life, and I think that that's informed me about how you overcome those obstacles and the tools that you need to use and the people that you need to reach out to when you're at that kind of nadir in your life. And that certainly happened to me at various points. And I'm never a shy person, and have always asked for help. I think the worst thing to do is to fail and never have reached out to find out whether or not you're actually on the path to failure. It's one thing if you fail and you've actually reached out and then you still fail, but the worst is to be alone at that end point. And luckily, I've always had surrounded myself with people that could kind of uplift me and figure out how to course correct. And with Chicago Run, you know, our programs, we serve over 17,500 students in Chicago public schools and some of our most vulnerable communities in the city. And dealing with an entity like Chicago Public Schools is no easy task. Yeah. And we continue to be in a fiscal crisis, and the school system continues to kind of flounder, fiscally at least. And in 2013, we were actually at 55 schools at the time. And there was a massive school closing in that moment. And we had 12 of our schools were closed during that massive school closing. And we had a wait list of schools at that point that still wanted our programs. And I remember our board, which was very numbers driven. Our board, you know, lots of business people on our board, and success in many ways to them was the bigger we are, the better we are.
Yeah.
And when all those schools closed, instead of replacing the schools, I actually thought that our programs were failing with the new structure within CPS, because recess had been reinstated and our programs looked very different than they had when we first launched. And so instead of replacing those schools, which we could have, I actually told the board, I want to scale back. I want to reevaluate our programming, because I don't think that we're being very effective and successful in some of our schools. And I think we need to course correct, and we can grow in a couple of years after we've really reevaluated the value of our programs and sort of readjusted to the different needs that CPS now was demonstrating. It was no easy task to walk into a board meeting, and I remember being petrified of having, at the beginning of the school year, of telling our board members that we were going to go from serving 16,000 kids to serving 13,000. I had really good reasoning as to why we were doing this, but I did have a lot of board members question me at the beginning to say, well, are we failing? I said, I think we will fail if we don't reevaluate where we're at right now and adjust and listen to our schools that are telling us something else. And why our programs are not working right now is because there are changing needs within the school system that we need to address in order to be more effective. So what could be perceived by many as a failure by just the sheer number of students that we had to scale back on, I actually thought it was a real win for us, because we reevaluated, we readjusted, and then, you know, in 2 years we grew again and we're a much more effective program than we would have been had we just continued to just replace those schools.
Yeah.
And there was also this real sense from our team at Chicago Run, which was, we have to listen to our schools, and our schools are telling us that our kids and our teachers and our parents right now are feeling as though the city is not invested in them. When you close that many schools in our neighborhoods, you're sending a message to our children that they're not worthy of investment.
Yeah.
And so we also had to think about that and how our programs were going to actually be able to create even more pride in our children and utilize sport as a way to build self-confidence after this really destructive time had passed.
That's a really interesting insight, I think, for everyone. I mean, everybody fails at some point or another, and when you do, that's such a key moment to make a decision on right after the failure, and that is to take time. It sounds like this is what you did when those schools closed. You used it as a time to really reflect on what is our mission, who we're serving, and it also sounds like you really took the time to listen and not rush right into it. Because it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, this, if the board had driven it, they may have said, well, let's just replace those schools as quickly as possible to get back to our numbers. But instead, you said, let's take some time and really reflect on our mission and listen, and then make a decision about how to move on from there.
Right, and I think, you know, I translated it into a sort of a business model for them. And I said, you know, we have some CEOs of companies on that board. And I said, and they're all great people that really believe in our mission. But I said to them, now think about your companies. Would you put a bad product on a shelf and feel confident about it? No, you wouldn't. So instead, what do? You go back to the drawing board, you recreate that granola bar, or you figure out what's going to be better for the population that you're serving that granola bar to. And and everyone got it in that regard. Okay. And they were. I mean, it was somewhat, you have a good case to tell. It was actually easy to convince them. It was just also, and actually, in all honesty, even going back to funders who had been funding us, to then see such a drastic drop, almost a 20% drop to a certain, in our numbers, when you actually explain to them why you did it, they had even more buy-in into your organization because they really respected the fact that you were listening to your teachers, to your communities, to your schools, and you were reflecting on how to better serve the needs of your participants and versus just growth for growth's sake.
Yeah. It's really helpful insight. I wonder if we could reflect too on, so would you say, are the majority of the schools that you work with, I know one of the measurements that I sometimes hear is schools will say we have X amount of kids, percentage of kids who are on preschool lunches.
Right.
And so what percentage of the schools that you work with would you say have a high percentage of those kids who are on preschool lunches?
So overall, across our 44 schools, we have 84% of our kids qualify for the free reduced lunch program.
Okay.
And I think, you know, when we first started Chicago Run, 79% of kids in Chicago public schools were only receiving 1 hour of physical activity a week. Luckily, which was obviously one of the leading causes for childhood obesity, you're not getting activity every day. I mean, the CDC recommends that children should be getting at least 60 minutes of physical activity a day. Now they're getting 60 minutes a week. I mean, that's it. For us, that was a social injustice. Luckily, over the years, CPS has changed their policies and are requiring schools to implement daily physical activity. The issue is they don't have the infrastructure to be able to do that, so they're relying on organizations like Chicago Run or Urban Initiatives and other like-minded organizations to come in and supplement that time. Now we do see that more kids are getting active every day, which is great, and how does that translate then into the classroom? And obviously also into their social emotional health. But at the same time, there's still a real social injustice happening This latest statistic said that only 24% of kids in low-income communities participate in sports, you know, as compared to affluent communities. Yeah. I mean, it's apples to oranges. So we have a lot of work to still do.
Yeah. How do you, I would imagine it takes a lot of, or that you need to be a real strong source of hope in some of the communities that you work with, both from, I think, for the kids who grow up in low-income neighborhoods, there is, for black and brown students, they're facing the racism in their own lives. They're facing growing up in a low-income neighborhood. They're also in the midst, for those who go to school, in the midst of Chicago Public School District, anybody, when you look at that, success is not usually an adjective right. that you use in describing them. And so when you're working with these kids and they've got all these things seemingly working against them, how do you respond to folks who ask that question? Like, how do you help them have a sense of hope? And do you also try to dispel notions that people just assume, well, they may not say this outright, but they may say, we're just going to have to write these kids off
right.
because of all of the strikes that are against them?
So, I mean, I've been talking a lot about this for the past couple of years, and it's really kind of trying to change the narrative here.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many stories of hope and resilience that happen every day with our kids and our parents and our teachers, but they all go untold. Yeah. The only thing that actually makes the headlines is the violence epidemic and the next shooting or the next failed school. And so when you're continuing that conversation of negativity, it does take a toll on our kids' mental state. And so in asking the question of how do we create hope, I actually think that the kids themselves are creating the hope and they're inspiring their own peers. What's been really wonderful to see is that, I mean, first of all, as you know, you have children of your own. Kids are resilient and kids are perceptive. And one thing that we've tried to do within our own programs, even at the early age, is to utilize sport as a way to build cross-community relationships and also as a way to build in service. So our older middle school students are actually partaking in opportunities where they're meeting kids from other neighborhoods, as well as doing community service or acts of service. And what's been so exciting to see is, I'll give you one example, one of my kids, Christian, who started with me in fourth grade, kid from Humble Park, he's now just finished his freshman year at University of Michigan.
Wow.
And he's actually interning for us now, and he is running his first marathon in October and fundraising for Chicago Run. And this is a kid who, when I asked him, Christian, why are you doing this? And he said, I have to give back to the program that gave me so much. And so it's this incredible sense of hope that he has, but that he's also inspiring his peers and his younger peers. And that's actually why we created this new program called Lace Up, which is Leadership Action Community Endurance. And that is because we were organically seeing our middle school youth age out of the program, and they were going off to high school, and they didn't want to be on the cross-country team or a track team, because we're not trying to build elite athletes. We are trying to build good citizens
yeah.
through sport. And so they were coming back to their middle schools and serving as junior coaches without getting paid, or just because they just wanted to be a part of something, and they wanted to be good role models. And so we realized we had to capitalize on this. And so we brought this focus group together of alumni that had been in our programs. And we said, look, I came up with the name one really late, like midnight one night. And we brought this focus group together. And I said, okay, here's the name. What would you do with this? And it was like music to my ears to hear that all of these high school students said if there had been a high school program for us right after we graduated from Running Mates, we would want, yes, the fitness and the running, but we want to be able to interact with kids from across the city. We want to be able to do acts of service, and we want to be exposed to career opportunities that would help us think and dream bigger. And that's what we've now created, and we're in our first year with that program, and it's just great to see that these are high school students coming back and inspiring hope in their peers, because you can't be what you can't see.
Yeah, yeah. I really appreciate that insight, and that it's a little bit of a corrective on my part, because I think I just fell into that sense of like, these kids have so many things seemingly going against them, and so there's that thought of like somebody from the outside, like yourself, has to bring them hope, forgetting that there's already a groundswell. It's already there, and it's already happening. And I would imagine in your position as kind of founder and executive director, there's both running Chicago Run and also as one of the faces for Chicago Run. How do you tell those stories? How do you... And do you think there's a receptivity from society to hear those stories?
Yes, I think, you know, as much as I've been the external face of the organization, and I did grow up in one of the communities we serve, and so I certainly was much more fortunate than others in my community at the time. Pilsen was known as, you know, a very impoverished, gang-infested neighborhood, and you know, the only time you did see kids running was that they were running from a cop or from a gang. It's obviously changed quite a lot 40 years later. But I do think that I represent a community that I know that community really well, even if I had an opportunity to sort of go outside for other resources. But I also think that... I have listened really well over the years to our teachers and our kids and gotten to know them. I mean, I'm a community organizer at heart, so part of this entire journey, and actually probably, I'd actually have to go back even to my childhood, being an only child growing up in a biracial, bicultural environment, I've always felt as though I couldn't connect with either side really well. I always felt like I was somewhat stuck in the middle. And so as a child, being a resilient kid that I was, I tried to find connection with everybody I could, and I still try to do that. And so I try to find, even if I have no real idea what it's like to live in Englewood, because Englewood is certainly different than Pilsen, and yes, they might be both poverty-stricken neighborhoods, but they are completely different in many ways.
Yeah.
And so, but it's about listening to our kids and our teachers and our families that are talking about their stories and what they're experiencing, and then figuring out how to make that connection with your own personal story as well as the entire Chicago Run story. So that's sort of how I feel like. And then obviously we have, you know, now our kids can tell the story, right? I mean, they're the better ones to tell the story. I mean, now that we have kids that are graduated college that were part of our programs, you know, that they're the representatives of the organization. I can be quiet now.
Do you mind if I ask you, and because you brought it up, it just kind of sprung to mind, and mainly because I was listening to a podcast about those who are biracial and growing up and not exactly sure where they fit in,
mm-hmm.
and their own feeling of not belonging, and it sounds like one of the ways you did that was just continually having conversations and listening and reaching out to lots of different people. Were there other things that you did to try to get a sense of where's my place in the world, because I'm not sure if I fit in either of those worlds?
Well, it's funny, you know, my family has it really messed up. I mean, the actual, first of all, I certainly identify myself much more heavily on my Latino side, and this is why I say we're messed up, because the actual Caucasian side of me, the Irish side of me, is my mother, and my mother is actually a professor of Mexican history and was the one who actually raised me half my childhood in Mexico, whereas my Mexican father was the one who's been here all his, or since he was born in Mexico, but then lived here since I was a kid. So my mother actually is probably more Latina than my dad even is. So that's why she lives in Mexico permanently. So that's why I sort of kind of fall more towards the Latino side than I do probably my Irish side, which I don't know much about my Irish side. But I still do call myself a leprechauna. So, I think that there were moments where, going back to your question about connections, right, that having grown up in a city in Chicago public schools. I was the first generation of magnet school kids. And actually, that really informed me about how to build connections as well, because we were kids that were bused in from all across the city. And it's actually informed me, one of the reasons that one of my missions with Chicago Run was to utilize sport for cross-community relationship building, because I had such an incredible opportunity to meet kids from all over the city. And mainly at the time, we were 90% free reduced lunch, but these were some of the smartest kids from some of the most under-resourced neighborhoods, but that just had incredible, they were just brilliant. And it allowed me to connect with kids that I probably wouldn't have ever been connected to otherwise had I just stayed in Pilsen. So that was probably also my initial connection piece. And then, and I would say also, you know, I was unafraid. You know, as an only child too, you were around a lot of adults a lot. And both my parents were big activists. So I was constantly at like every protest downtown. I was constantly around all these like highly intellectual people that kept talking about how to change the world. And they were all professors, so a lot of them weren't changing the world, but they were talking about changing the world. But I was also, it really informed me later on about I needed to make an impact, and whether it was on youth or on sports or whatever, it resonated with me at such a young age.
Yeah. So what are your tried and true, tried and true things for you when you have those moments of either failure or discouragement? Are there some things that you rely on or go to help you move through it?
Sure. I mean, I have been really fortunate to have an incredibly strong group of nonprofit leaders that are my best friends. And we, you know, it's funny, is people sometimes think you're all competing for the same funding, yeah. You're all, you know, competing for the next leadership position, and most of them are all women. It is incredible to see this group of women in our 30s and 40s that are just so absolutely supportive of one another. And they are the people that for the last 10 years, are the people that I go to when I don't know if things are going to go well. I mean, we have been there through divorce. We have been there through raising children. We have been there through death, through jobs. I mean, so they are who I rely on when I need. They're my toolkit.
Yeah.
I rely heavily on my running,
yeah.
even if I'm injured. I always tell our kids, when I first started coaching our kids, I always said there isn't a problem you can't take with you on a run. You might not be able to solve it, but you feel a lot better afterwards.
Yeah.
And that's my serenity, right? So I think you as a runner know that. You can really mull over things on a run. I certainly believe in a higher power, and I start every day on my knees saying the serenity prayer. And I think that is something that, and I will literally throughout the day, if I'm feeling like I am not in control of something, which is sometimes when you have a type A personality or you have major control issues, and I do, I'll be the first to admit it, and I will get down in a hallway and get on my knees. There's something very humbling about getting on your knees and saying the serenity prayer over and over and over again, just because you really do have to learn how to let go, and failure is okay. But
yeah.
But those are a few of my things that I would go to.
Those are great things. Yeah. Well, good. Was there anything else you wanted to share about failure or resilience or anything like that?
No, I think I try to. You know, it's interesting because the majority of my staff at Chicago Run are all millennials, and they have this sense of you can't fail, right? Or that they, like, there's such a stigma to failure.
Yeah.
And I, the minute they walk in the door, I say to them I'll tell them a couple different things. But one thing I say to them is, if you don't fail at some point in this job, you're not trying hard enough. So it's okay.
Yeah.
We're going to be here for you if you fail. Just don't try not to let us know that you're failing. Don't hide it. Like,
right.
It's okay.
Right.
But it really does mean you're not trying hard enough, yeah. I think. So we all need to fail in order, and it's about what can you do to pick yourself up after that.
Right.
Do you go so deep into a depression because you failed, or do you figure out how to course correct and
yeah.
lift yourself up?
Yeah.
I always say, put your big girl panties on and get going.
Yeah.
Okay?
Good. Well, Isha, thank you so much
for
joining me today for this.
Yeah, thank you so much.
That's this week's episode. Thanks again to Alicia Gonzalez for speaking with me. You can learn more about Chicago Run by going to their website, chicagorun.org. Hope you will subscribe to this podcast, as my next conversation is with Brian McLaren, noted religious leader and author. To learn more about my book, Failing Boldly, and the ministry I'm a part of, you can go to my website, christiankuhn.com. The music from this podcast comes from Enoch Kim. You can find Enoch by typing in The Musemaker on YouTube, Twitter, and SoundCloud. Thanks again for listening. Hello, and welcome to Failing Boldly, the podcast that takes a look at failure, resilience, and perseverance, and lessons that we learn when we respond, when we deal with failure.